Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 1025-1063, The Game and the Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heat and Cooling and Electrical Game Studios, and you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton joins us now. Hut, the biggest story of the day of the offseason, Brady stepping away from football. Your initial reaction?
I was surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be. But yeah, I thought he was going to come back for a 24th season. He was going to have options. The reports are out there that it was bucks or nothing. I think he had more options than that. And you can tell that the relationship issues off the field weighed on him throughout the year, you know, and the way he handled that versus the way he was having to handle everything else on the field. I'm sure there's more to tell. Jim Gray will get it out of him on the Let's Go podcast next week, I'm sure. But yeah, I'm surprised because I still think Brady can play at a high level, maybe not at his highest level, but he led the league in attempts this season, like 36 more than Justin Herbert, who finished second in that category. And he was 23 more than Herbert in completions. Brady also led the league in completions. He'd had zero run game, not much of an offensive line, and I thought he would try to pair himself up with one that could go win one more title, and instead he's on South Beach.
And to me, I looked at the 49ers to be the perfect landing spot for Brady. He can go back home, win a championship there, and what a storybook ending to his career, to end it up with a Super Bowl, with a championship, with a team that he grew up cheering for. I looked at that and said, okay, Brady goes to San Francisco, and in Mike Sando's pick six this week, it said if Brady goes to San Francisco, an NFL exec said that could mean Trey Lance to the Titans. Of course, now that Brady's out of the equation, that's kind of blown up. So what does Brady's retirement mean for not just the quarterback carousel around the league, but for the Titans as well?
It affects quite a bit. I don't know about Trey Lance because I don't know the price tag. I mean, they gave up quite a bit to go get him. And 2 years later, I don't know what the price tag would be to go get him in a trade like this. That's a big jump for me to think the Titans would give up whatever San Fran would need. But there is the great connection there with Carthon. So I understand linking those two. Brady had, you mentioned the 49ers now with the Purdy news where he could be out up to 9 months with the Tommy John surgery, and Trey Lance is coming off that broken ankle. I mean, there's a lot there that they have to decide. The Raiders are moving on from Derek Carr. I don't think you can get that back in, after what has gone on and transpired with the relationship there. They're moving on from him. And then across the league, there's a ripple effect with all of that, with all of the connections that people were making, with the Dolphins, with the Commanders, the Jets. I mean, there's so many different going back to the Bucks. I mean, if the report is accurate, and I know Breer was opining with a show yesterday, Albert Breer saying that the Chicago Bears are sticking with Justin Fields in his opinion. If that's true, there are a lot more teams likely vying for that number one spot as they begin to evaluate the quarterback market and get ahead of Houston. And Houston has to be thinking the same thing. They may need to move up.
Now, Hutt, looking at the Titans situation, because I think we were talking earlier, you know, the Tom Brady retirement affects, to me, two teams. One, the Las Vegas Raiders, because now I think they got to sort of sit back and say, you know, is there a possibility that we can repair, you know, this relationship with Derek Carr? Because, you know, whether they cut him before the 16th or 17th of February or not, I think whoever he goes to or whoever they deal him to, they will rework the deal and add some years and give him some more money. So I don't think that's a huge thing for them, but for the Tennessee Titans as well, because this is one of the landing spots that many thought that would be ideal for him. How do you think it affects the Titans? I think it, from a standpoint of, you know, they, you know, do you move on from Ryan Tannehill or do you keep him? I think now you got to sort of turn your thinking to, well, we can keep Tannehill, but we need to be in the market to get our future quarterback.
Yeah. And I think you could do both, honestly, Mace. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. But and it doesn't have to be a first round pick either. Like, bring back Tannehill. Again, a scenario that I buy into. I like it. You guys don't have to. You can hate me for it. I think the Titans are a great opportunity for Hendon Hooker. Because you bring back Tannehill, you don't have to rush Hendon Hooker back from injury. He needs some time to develop, and he doesn't have much time based on his age. I get all that. But at worst, Hendon Hooker is a very valuable backup QB. I think he's proven that from what we've seen. And the style of play fits the college style that's moving more rapidly to the NFL now more than ever. And it's been trending that way anyway. And it's a style that the Titans were trending in when they drafted Malik Willis. So I like that plan because Tannehill, to me, is not the pressing issue with this roster. And I don't think that the Titans are looking at a rebuild. I buy into, and I was thinking about this the other day, instead of rebuild, I would be pitching a rebrand. They can still be the identifiable Tennessee Titans in the trenches team with more creativity, more options, more a plan that seems to develop as the game develops, which was unlike anything we saw this past season, especially in the second halves. I think, again, I would plan for Tannehill. I think the hire of offensive coordinator is bigger than any personnel move this team can make this offseason. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. They clearly look at Downing as someone they're moving on from and probably made up their mind in December, quite frankly. And now they have to get that hire right because this is an organization that believes you can win and compete this time of year with a great defense and a good offense and running the football, rushing the passer, and protecting the quarterback. They can still do that and rebrand who they are moving forward, and they can do that through the offensive coordinator hire. It doesn't necessarily have to be a quarterback.
Now, that was going to be my next question, Hutt, in regards to the offensive coordinator. Does it truly, matter whether it's Matt Nagy or Eric Bieniemy in your mind? Because I look at it as, Vrabel talks about loyalty in regards to their coaching. He means guys that are coming here that is all for the team, that is not looking for, not thinking in their mind, I'm taking this job just to get an advancement to a head coaching job. And I think Matt Nagy is a guy that's coming in, and if he gets this offense going the way it should, it would only be a 1-year deal. But I think with Eric Bieniemy, it's more of a, he comes in here and he would stay a little bit longer than to say a Matt Nagy if he turns this offense around.
So I think both can be solid options. Mm-hmm. I'll start. I lean towards Bieniemy, not because I think he'll stay longer. Just because I think so. A great example would be Mike Kafka. Mike Kafka was in Kansas City and he left to be the OC with Brian Daboll. But Brian Daboll gets the credit in New York, not Mike Kafka. But Mike Kafka wasn't underneath Andy Reid. And when he went to New York, it wasn't like everyone was clamoring for, oh, this is a great offense. This guy's going to be amazing. He's now one of the finalists out in Arizona with Monty Austin for doing the interviews. That can be Eric Bieniemy. If he doesn't land a head coaching job this offseason, as soon as the Super Bowl is over, he's not under contract. So the Titans have asked for permission. We have, to my knowledge, we have not seen that they have been granted permission to interview for other positions. They don't have to get permission after the Super Bowl. So the timing of why you would wait, and by the way, there's a lot of offensive coordinator hires to be made across the league. But if you look at the guys who have been hired already versus what the Titans have not announced, I think it gives us an idea of who they're zeroing in on based on what we know. There have to be other names as well that we have not seen reported because this is Vrabel's deal, from what I understand. And while it's a collaborative effort with the tone and temper of the organization, Vrabel's going to make this hire. And, it's not as pressing, but it is. But it doesn't have to be if you kind of already know which way you're leaning. And at worst, and it doesn't have to be at worst, but at worst, it's Tim Kelly. You mentioned loyalty. Mm-hmm. They tried to hire or interview Tim Kelly when he was still with the old regime in Houston. And when Culley was out, Tim Kelly was out, the Texans didn't grant permission. Kelly came here whenever he was free, and he joined up as a passing game coordinator. So it can be Tim Kelly, and it can be different than Todd Downing, just like it was a good decision to elevate Arthur Smith whenever LaFleur left. So I think the options can be right there in front of us, but the timetable of all this sets up for one of the coaches that could not interview because of the conference championship games until Monday, or it's someone that's continuing until their contract expires where they are, which would fit Bieniemy.
Do you think it matters, quickly before we go to break, do you think it matters much to Rand Carthon whether it's someone that's, you know, a part of a system that he's used to, or someone that's outside the system he's used to?
I think they hired Rand Carthon because he fits the same model and tone of what Vrabel and the organization was already gearing towards. Mm-hmm. San Francisco is built very similar to the Titans in many ways, and how you would describe them, right? Let's put it that way, how the Titans were built versus the depth they ended up with. I think Carthon was hired more about the depth and personnel of San Francisco, for the players that they brought in, players that they lost, next man up mentality. San Fran did a really good job with that until the bitter end. I think that fits what they're doing. And there's no way that they bring him in an interview process and say, yeah, he's perfect for what we're doing, if he and Vrabel disagree on the style of offense. And I think he hit that home whenever he answered the question about Derrick Henry in the presser last week. So I lean towards they're going to be on the same page, and I doubt that it's going to be anything different than what we're seeing. Because keep in mind, the draft pick of Malik Willis should tell us how the organization was already trending. And if you look at San Francisco and what they've done with how they went after Trey Lance, it's not that far-fetched to see how both guys, Carthon and Vrabel, can view how they want to build an offense around a solid roster.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, sticks around with us coming up next. It's Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
We're back on Caroline Willie and DeMays, 102.5, The Game. We're talking with Jonathan Hutton from Outkick 360, talking Titans. So, Jonathan, a couple of things that have come out here in the last day or two. First, your thoughts on what the salary cap increase does to the to-do list overall for Rand Carthon.
It gives them some room that they didn't have last year. They'll have to make some more room, as we know. But, Willie, it gives them room to get the Jeffrey Simmons deal done. They didn't do that last year, and Simmons mentioned that they didn't have the money to do it. I think he's referencing the salary cap space that wasn't there a year ago because they were tied up with Tannehill. I realize, like, I've been on the Tannehill train here. I think that's the easiest path to being competitive next year, not going the rookie route, unless you're willing to pay the high price, which is fine if they choose to do that. They have many holes, though, and I don't think they're buying into a rebuild as much as people think. With that in mind, you can also save $18 million by trading and releasing Ryan Tannehill. That's not the only move they make. I think there's several others to come. But I lean towards the initial thought of they've got some money, more money to work with now, to save some money on the cap by restructuring and then extending their best player on the roster in Jeffrey Simmons, which needs to get done.
What are your thoughts on the move from grass to turf and the way that they rolled it out yesterday? It was pretty interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a release of that type, you know, for that particular thing. And I think historically, you tell me, have you ever seen a team basically make the case to say, we think we will have less injuries going to artificial turf? That is against the grain of history, for sure. And I'm not saying it's wrong. They've certainly done their research, but it is interesting.
I agree. Yeah, it was strange. I don't like it just because of the aesthetic of playing on natural grass and playing outdoors, right? Like that's my biased view on grass versus turf. Players will tell you, though, that they're, you know, that Indy gets a bad rap for all the injuries that take place there because of the turf. Vrabel was pointing to the turf and the new technology that they have, and they revamped it last year, the year prior, in the bubble, in the practice facility, indoor practice field. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I also think that the new stadium played a factor in it because they're moving to turf anyway. And, you know, if it's going to save them a couple of injuries and they can point to the numbers that where it will, so be it. It's clear they studied up on it, and a lot of injuries happen on their turf and they can't grow the grass that they need to. You know, quite frankly, you can drive through some yards in Brentwood same time of year and they're beautiful. So I don't buy that as much, but whatever. I think they're going to turf anyway. I hate it just because of everything involved with it. Willie, I also thought this, the TSSAA state championship games should be at Nissan Stadium. That's the other thing I thought.
Would love to see that. Would love to see that. I know Vanderbilt, since they went back to turf, would love to get in on that. I know there's a lot of money.
Chattanooga's doing it. Chattanooga's a blast, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I think all the cities that have done it have really tried to do it right. But, boy, I mean, just from a selfish standpoint, having it in Nashville would be a lot of fun. And for those of you like yourself that – and I've done it in the past, have to make the drive to Cookeville or Chattanooga to do the games. It would be a little more convenient for us, for sure.
And it's the center of the state, so it's fair for all teams traveling. But yeah, sure. I mean, I took you on an off ramp there, but that's the other thing I initially thought of when they announced the turf is like, oh, they can actually host more games now, and they can host bowl games on the same weekend. They can do the Music City Bowl on the same weekend they have a home game.
Absolutely, that does open up a lot of possibilities, but. And so all of that I totally get, and this is the era we live in here. I am curious. I do think that this type of turf, from what I'm told, is a little different than the traditional, even the field turf that you see with the ground up tires. This is not that. This is coconut shells and things. I think the Marlins have this, so it's a relatively new type of artificial turf, which they think will help.
So they were revamping the bubble. I have not been in the bubble since they did this.
It's vegan turf.
It's vegan turf. Yes. Organic.
Vegan turf. Yes.
You know, we shop at Whole Foods. We get organic stuff. You know, we think
Trader
it's healthy. Yeah, it's more expensive.
Management. Yeah. Yeah. It's the Jarrell Casey of turf management. Is what we're
thinking. We feel better about ourselves, our diet, when we go this way.
Yes. Yes. You feel healthy. I apparently, it's much better. They're not making the move for a lateral result. Let's put it that way. And it also it sets them up probably for what they're going to put in the same stuff in the new stadium. So, you know, again, I like natural grass just because I like football outdoors and it's the atmosphere that's involved with it. But so be it if it's going to actually have results. But you know the reaction. I can hear Jared Stillman now. When the first injury happens on that turf, they're going to point to that statement and say it was due to the turf. And hey, I mean, I tend to believe more injuries happen on the turf, but apparently not on this new surface. And if that's the case, I don't know why more teams aren't using it.
Well, that's what really intrigues me about this, because you've got a team that has really had to deal with a lot of injuries. This past year, you could argue it derailed their whole season. As much flaws as they might have been in the roster, if they had everybody, you can't convince me that it didn't make a 2 or 3 game difference with the collective guys that were missed.
Agreed.
And I do think that they believe that the grass had something to do with it in the home field. And so what jumped out at me in that release was 2018 to 2021. I don't know why they chose 2018, if that's the furthest they were willing to do the research, if the league helped them at all.
That was Vrabel's tenure. I think that's why.
Yeah, maybe so. But they seem to say that, yes, we're standing by this. There were more injuries that took place on that field because all the new sod they put down. So I'm wondering if this will help going forward. If they can show in the next couple of years that it does cut down on lower body injuries, I think they'll feel better about it.
So, Willie, whenever I see this too, as you're thinking, I'm spinning like, okay, who's pitching this? Like, who's in charge of this study? Wouldn't it be the training staff that's feeling the heat?
Save their jobs.
Well, yeah, I think they're all looking for answers. Why is this happening, right? Yeah. I don't think they know the answer for sure. I don't think you can know the answer, but I think they're trying to figure out if there's anything we can do to reduce it by 10%, that would help.
Yes, and I mean they also it's a combination of everything. right? So if it even reduces by 10%, it saves you one or two players based on the numbers we've seen come through the doors over the last 24 months. So, yes. And if it saves you, if those two players are two starters and it happens to be Derrick Henry over the last two seasons or Harold Landry this past season, the preseason, whatever it might be, yeah, it can win a game for you based on which player you're saving. We'll never know that, right? We'll see the numbers as guys get hurt. We won't know who didn't get hurt because they moved to turf, right? Like that, we'll never see those facts. We will only see the studies out about the negatives when it comes to the injury. So to each their own, they're looking for answers, but at least they're pointing to some type of solution that they believe that can make a difference instead of just standing back and saying, yeah, it's not the trainer's fault. Our players are repeat offenders with this. Ultimately, some of it comes down to the Titans have brought in players with injury histories. Bud Dupree had injury history when they signed. He was coming off an ACL. Caleb Farley had back issues. He claims he's healthy again after his back surgery. But again, we've heard that during the draft process. There are other examples to point to. My point being, it's a combination of everything, and they're trying to solve whatever pieces to the overall puzzle they can in the immediate future.
Last one for you, Hutton. Jonathan Hutton, OK360, is with us. Some news in the league last night. Sean Payton to Denver, which I think is just hilarious. And D'Amico Ryans is the head coach of the Houston Texans. Your thoughts on those moves?
Sean Payton, okay.
A lot Denver to unpack ownership. There.
Okay, I'll be brief. Denver ownership reminded me of John Curry at Tennessee. They flew to Ann Arbor. They landed in a college town and left without the college coach. They then, according to Schefter, Rappaport said that they then circled back to D'Amico Ryans, and he turned them down, and he got the sixth year in Houston. So they're chasing their top three guys, and they end up back with Sean Payton, who apparently had issues with a power struggle with ownership. It reminds me of a college search where they're trying to get their guy so there's no egg on the face. And I think the fact that they flew to Ann Arbor to go back to Harbaugh after he removed his name, I think that reflects more on Denver than it does Harbaugh, that he took the meeting. And I'm curious to see the structure with Sean Payton when we see the opening press conference on everything there. And then with D'Amico Ryans, I mean, he's the hottest name for the young first-time head coaches. He goes from a very, very talented roster to the Houston Texans. Offensive coordinator, normally your first staff is not your final staff. The offensive coordinator paired with the rookie that they're going to draft is crucial for his success. He took over for Robert Saleh in San Francisco, and he took over a great defense. And he's a young, up-and-coming, great defensive coordinator. Now he's a head coach. But he's going to a roster in a complete and total rebuild, and that's from the leadership up top all the way down. And they feel like they found their guy, and they've shown a lot of investment with the six-year contract. But it's still a very uphill climb. I don't think you flip a switch with that automatically with him. I hope they have patience with him because they haven't had patience with their recent head coaches.
Jonathan Hutton, OutKick 360. Appreciate you for joining us.
Always enjoy this, guys. I really appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
Chat with you next week. We got Hutton's thoughts on it. I want to get our thoughts on it as well because I think the Sean Payton to Denver saga is just hilarious. And we'll get into that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have a thought on that, it's Caroline Willie DeMace, 1025-1063 The Game.
Yeah, a complex deal that really has been in the works for several days, kind of under the cover of darkness, but the Denver Broncos have now agreed to terms with the New Orleans Saints for compensation to complete the trade of Sean Payton. And what it is the New Orleans Saints receive a first rounder and a second rounder for Sean Payton and a third rounder going back. So essentially a first rounder and a pick swap now need to finalize a deal with Sean Payton, which should really be no issue. This is going to happen. Sean Payton now expected to be going to be the Denver Broncos head coach. But Mike, this was not a straight arrow for the Denver Broncos. Listen to what they did. First of all, they targeted D'Amico Ryans as their top choice. Mm-hmm. Then it was clear that was not going to happen. He was going to go to the Texans. Then they flew to Ann Arbor to try to get Jim Harbaugh and convince him to be the coach. Then today, when we all thought they were zeroing in on Sean Payton, they made another run at D'Amico Ryans, failed there, and now go back to Sean Payton and reach a deal with him.
There you go. That was Ian Rappaport on Sean Payton getting hired by the Denver Broncos. And I don't know why this story just tickles me pink. And I don't know if it's just, you know, the bitter Saints fan in me that's sad to see Sean Payton go elsewhere, or if it's just the way that everything has fallen out with the Denver Broncos coaching search. You know, it initially came out as reported that Sean Payton wasn't interested in the Denver Broncos job because when he was meeting with ownership, that there was some sort of, he sensed that there would be some sort of power struggle. And then Sean Payton gets hired. He accepts the job and then comes out and says, oh, no, that was false. That's completely false. We had a great meeting with ownership. And I don't know if that's Sean Payton saving face or if that report really was just incorrect. And then we hear, you know, they go to Ann Arbor. They want to hire Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh says no. So they say, okay, we'll go with our second choice, which just so happens to be, in my opinion, the best coaching option out there. And I really do view this as Denver's kind of last-ditch effort to say, okay, was it Nathaniel Hackett? Was he the problem? Or was Russell Wilson the problem? Was Russell Wilson's 2022 season really just a fluke? Or did he need an offensive guru as head coach to kind of unlock whatever made him so great in Seattle? And we're going to find out real quick. But it's just this whole, the way that this has fallen out feels to me like when you're at a middle school dance and you know, the girls are up on one side and the boys are lined up on the other side and you pick who you want to be your dance partner and then there's two left and you're like, I don't really want to dance with you, but you're my only option.
It's either that or sit by yourself in that corner, man. That's a tough corner to be in. I've been there.
So I was like, okay, you come on.
I'm going to get something to drink over here. Slow song over yet?
Punch bowl, yeah. You and your sweaty hands. I don't want to dance with you.
Oh, man. You know, this whole Sean Payton thing, obviously, Denver, you know, were in a frenzy trying to figure out, you know, is it going to be Harbaugh, Ryan? Is it going to be Payton? It's sort of, they just kept on going back to each door. It was like, go to this door. No, that person said no, let's go to this door. That person said no, let's go to this door. That person has a problem with management. Oh, let's go back to this door, the Harbaugh door. Well, Harbaugh just said no again. You know, oh, D'Amico Ryans, no, that door is closed. Finally, they come back to Sean Payton. Now, you wonder what was the conversation with Sean Payton, because if he was hesitant about taking a job the first go around when you asked him because of the power struggle, so to speak, what did you have to sort of back off a little bit as a organization to say, all right, Sean, you can have total power over, you know, whatever it is, drafting guys, you know, free agents, everything else. If it has to do with the team, free, you have total power. Did basically Denver have to come back and, you know, basically bow the knee and kiss the ring of Sean Payton? If they had to do that, man, I don't know if this relationship's going to last too long. You know, and then there's the whole Russell Wilson thing. Was Russell Wilson a product of Pete Carroll, or was Russell Wilson just a good player that now he comes to a team with a coach that really wasn't ready to be a coach? Was the coach the problem and an office coordinator? Or is it truly, you know, Russell Wilson that's the problem? Well, we will find that out very quickly with Sean Payton and Russell Wilson. Can Sean Payton, after being off 2 years, was it 2 years? I think somewhere around his last coaching was 21. So it's been a year. Can Sean Payton now, can he do with Russell Wilson what he did with Drew Brees and get him to that level? Drew Brees had showed he was a hell of a quarterback with San Diego at the time, but they had drafted their quarterback of the future. So, and then he had a shoulder issue. So they figured they can deal him and whatnot. And you know, it worked out perfectly for the Saints. Yeah. So can Sean Payton recreate that with a Russell Wilson that many feel isn't really dedicated to the sport the way he needs to be, and was possibly a byproduct of a Pete Carroll type coach team with a great defense and a hell of a running game.
I think job one, let's forget about the actual X's and O's. Uh-huh. To me, the first job for Sean Payton is to build the relationship mm-hmm. with Russell Wilson, because you take that job, you know you're stuck with Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And he had a brutal year last year. We all know that. It was a total disaster. Russell Wilson knows that. I think if Russell Wilson is any kind of competitor, he's got to be looking to prove everybody wrong that last year was a fluke. I'm better than that. I don't want the last chapters of my career to be just this march to oblivion, right? The worst contract ever, worst trade ever. That's what you'll hear if it continues on this path. So he's got to be open-minded to work with Sean Payton. I do wonder, though, Drew Brees, all that success Payton had with Brees mm-hmm. for all those years, Brees is so different than Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, he's never done it like Brees. Wilson's had his own way of doing it, the extending plays, the movement, the step up in the pocket, the finding guys down the field. That was not Drew Brees, that's for sure. So I'm wondering how the offensive mind of Payton will match up with Wilson, especially if they have a relationship, a good relationship, if they can rebuild that part of it. This is what I really, though, don't understand, is why is Sean Payton so attractive to the Broncos that they would trade a first and a second round pick?
And a third.
On top of giving up everything that they gave up to get Russell Wilson. They need picks. They need to replenish. That to me will never make sense. I just don't see. I think there are other solutions at coach that are worth, that just can get the job done rather than trade huge assets. Those are huge assets. That's huge capital.
And also dish out a lot of money doing it.
Oh,
according to Sporting News, and these are the same numbers that I've heard floating around, mm-hmm. that Sean Payton's making between $17 and $20 million a season. Mm. That is a massive amount of money. And I think the reason why they're doing it is because they're looking at themselves saying, we traded the farm for Russell Wilson. So we have to do whatever it takes to make Russell Wilson work. And picking up whoever coach around the league, maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. But Sean Payton is such a proven commodity. And Russell Wilson was really pushing for Sean Payton. And I think it's also for Russell Wilson to save face for himself. That if I can do it with anybody, I can do it with Sean Payton.
The money is fine. Mm-hmm. I don't mind that if that's what you want to do. But the draft picks to me, you just made his job harder. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're coming in to coach our team. Sorry, you don't have a first round pick. I mean, that's
well,
tough.
It's basically an arms race here. Yeah. And Denver understands it because they're looking at three teams within their own division, Kansas City, the Raiders, and the Chargers. Well, Kansas City and the Chargers have their quarterback, in the future. The Raiders, they got a good quarterback. They want to upgrade, but they do have a guy to me that can win them games. They just need to get their defense right. Their pass defense is horrid. They need to get that right. I think if they get that right, then they're a much better team. Then you look at the AFC South. You got Jacksonville, who has their quarterback. Indy and Texans will get their quarterback. The Titans, they have a quarterback that can win. Obviously, yeah. They're going to upgrade it. You look at Baltimore, they have theirs. Cincinnati, they have theirs. Cleveland, they have theirs. Pittsburgh, seemingly, they have theirs. Buffalo has theirs. Miami has theirs. The Jets and Patriots are two teams that are sort of, but if the Jets get Aaron Rodgers, Denver understands that if they don't get a coach that can coach him, they may not ever make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So they had to go all in. They went all in for Russell Wilson last year. They had to go all in for Sean Payton. They had no other recourse. They was trying to get Harbaugh that would have came at a much cheaper price in regards to, because they wouldn't have had to give up any draft picks.
Right.
They went after him. They went after DeNico Ryans. They wouldn't have had to give up any draft picks for him. They couldn't get him. So they were left. Their hands were basically, Sean Payton basically has them backed in a corner. He does. He can ask for just about anything he wants to. And they got to give it to him. Because if they don't, then who they're going to get? Everybody that they wanted to get is not available anymore. And if they keep, if they don't get a coach that can coach up Russell Wilson, and I'm saying that, and like Russell Wilson's a rookie,
like
and this guy, exactly.
Yeah.
But he needs the coaching.
Yeah.
He needs it. So if they don't get someone that is proven they can win, then they're going to fall further and further behind all these teams that I shouted out.
Think about the contrast, though, of the resources. What the Broncos just did, as you mentioned, all the money for Peyton, giving up draft picks, big draft picks to get him. And what the Texans just did. The Texans are another team that traded all kinds of draft picks. They a couple years ago, they just...
For Laramie Tunsil, wasn't it? They gave up draft picks for Laramie Tunsil.
Laramie Tunsil was a big one. That they butchered the DeAndre Hopkins trade. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Then they had the whole Deshaun Watson debacle. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to get picks back. So they go for D'Amico Ryans. Now, the 49ers, they get compensated for that.
Mm-hmm.
The 49ers get 2 third-round picks for Rand Carthon, not from the Titans, but they just get compensatory picks. Now they get another 3rd-round pick for D'Amico Ryans. So the 49ers are replenishing draft picks, while the Broncos they already traded all these guys for Wilson, and now they trade more picks to get Peyton. That's really doubling down and seeing if you can do it without the bloodlines, the replenishing through the draft. I think that's just crazy.
And that's a fair point, because when the Broncos originally made that move to get Russell, and everyone was saying, oh my gosh, the Broncos are going to win that division. The Broncos are back. This is their next Peyton Manning. I thought, well, who's he throwing to? They don't have any weapons. And then to your point, Willie, they just go ahead and continue to spend draft capital because they have to continue to invest in their investment in Russell Wilson. But coming up next, what do we think about the Broncos now? You know, the perception of Russell Wilson going to the Broncos. Everyone thought the Broncos were going to be a force. Obviously, they weren't. So is Sean Payton the missing key? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your phones. I see them lining up. We're right to them next. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
I know this, and my main thought when I heard about this is that the Denver Broncos are getting a heck of a deal. They're getting a very, very successful, experienced head coach in Sean, who's mainly an offensive guy, has been throughout his assistant coaching career, head coaching career. He's always called the offensive plays. So he's the offensive stimulus that they're going to need to be successful. And this is a good defensive football team that Sean is joining. So they've got that phase of the game very well covered, being one of the best defensive teams in the NFL last season. So I think it's a great deal for Sean. I'm sure he's going to be compensated very highly from the Denver Broncos. The Broncos it's a great place to live. They've always been a good organization. I think it's a great deal for both Sean and the Broncos.
There you go. That was Jim Mora, former New Orleans Saints head coach. So he knows Sean Payton very well. Of course, very excited for his friend Sean Payton, who is now the head coach of the Denver Broncos. Going into this season, we were talking about the gauntlet of the AFC because of how many quality quarterbacks were in the conference. And we looped Russell Wilson into that conversation of Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. But we leave the 2022 season not lumping Russell Wilson into that conversation, because that's not what Russell Wilson was this year. I mean, he wasn't not just not good. He was pretty gosh darn awful. So now that Sean Payton is with Denver, Sean Payton, obviously a very well-regarded, a very impressive, and a very well-decorated offensive head coach in the National Football League, now, do we look at Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos differently? Do we look at the Broncos now that Russell Wilson has a legitimate coach? Do we look at the Broncos like they are a legitimate contender in the AFC? Should we start to worry about Russell Wilson again?
You spent some time growing up in the show me state.
I did.
I think that's where I am on them. You're going to have to show me. I
good
don't
one,
think,
Willie.
Yeah, no, I just don't. I don't think you can. It's pretty hard in that division. Mm-hmm. To make that kind of jump. As we mentioned, they put a lot of chips on the short term with all the draft capital they've given up. I just think that could blow up big time. But I do think Russell Wilson is going to have a chance to sort of reset the script. and show everybody that this narrative is not who he really is. That's what I would want to be doing. I'd spend a lot of time doing it. His reputation, his legacy is taking a big hit from what happened this last year. And he's had one heck of a career. It's changed. It did a 180. All of these things that we used to say about Russell Wilson are completely different now when you have the conversation today, like in this point in time. That wouldn't sit well with me. So I'd have an open mind on trying to rewrite the script.
I think it's both guys need this in a sense. I think more importantly, Russell does need Sean Payton more than Sean Payton needs Russell, but Sean Payton is sort of the Bill Belichick, Tom Brady thing, I think, with Sean Payton. Because was it Sean Payton or was it Drew Brees? You know, because when Drew retired, you know, they still was a good team, but they were not as scary without Drew Brees. So was it all Sean Payton or was it all Drew Brees or was it 50-50? I think, you know, this gives Sean Payton an opportunity to go to a team with a good quarterback, not a great quarterback, a good quarterback. But if he can win with this good quarterback and sort of, you know, revitalize his career, and if they get to a Super Bowl, then, you know, I think that cements his legacy as one of the greatest coaches of all time and one of the greatest play callers of all time. Because people will look and say, well, he took a quarterback that seemed to be on a downward spiral in his career, he took him and he made him relevant again, and they won a Super Bowl, or they went to a Super Bowl. I think with Russell Wilson, I think he needs Sean Payton because the narrative that's on him now is not a good one. You know, the narrative is, you know, it was probably more Pete Carroll, probably more of an historical defense that they had, probably more Marshawn Lynch than anything. And you saw what happened when Marshawn Lynch left. They were not the same team. You saw when they started to start to release players from that vaunted defense, Russell Wilson couldn't elevate that team back to where they were. So, you know, he has to sort of, if he doesn't put his ego to the side now and understand that, listen, I need Sean Payton more than anything, he never will. He never will. So that's the way. I think both guys need each other, but I think Russell Wilson needs Sean Payton more. But Sean needs it because you always have that conversation. Was it Drew Brees or was it really Sean Payton? Which one was it?
And if it doesn't get fixed, then I think these two moves by the Broncos are going to be, it's going to set you back for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Epic failure.
With all of the draft picks you give up, to go down that road with both of these guys, and if you don't get any results, that's one of the worst returns on investment you're going to get. It's already been well documented how tied they are to Russell Wilson's contract. Mm-hmm. You can't get out of it. Nobody's trading for it. You're stuck with him. You have to try to make it work. So there's a lot of desperate nature to how they're doing here, and I think it's got, if I had to put percentages on it, there's a higher percentage that it doesn't get fixed. I mean, mediocre at best, right? If they went 9-8, that'd be a heck of an improvement. And Russell Wilson is only going to get older. They've got, what, 3 more years for sure that they have to have Russell Wilson as their quarterback, or at least on the roster.
Between Russell Wilson and Sean Payton, Denver has given up 3 first-round picks, 2 for Russell Wilson, 1 for Sean Payton, a third, 2 second-round picks for Russell, a 5th for Russell, and a 4th round pick for Russell. And then also add in all the money they're paying Russell mm-hmm. Wilson, all the money that they're paying Sean Payton. Those are Super Bowl moves.
Yeah.
Those are moves that you sell out to win a Super Bowl. So I look at it, and I think it's more likely that there are members of the Denver front office that are going to get fired than it is more likely that they win a Super Bowl. Mm. I don't see this working. Yes, will Russell Wilson and this Denver team look better with Sean Payton? Yeah, probably, because I think that's the power of Sean Payton. That's what a good coach does. But looking at what Russell Wilson needed to win a Super Bowl in Seattle – Denver doesn't have that. And he's only older.
Well, here's a saving grace for Denver, because the coach's money doesn't count against the cap, I believe. That's something that the owner is paying.
Right, it doesn't count against the cap.
So, it doesn't count against the cap, so, but it's still
yeah,
money.
Yeah, but it's still money. Yeah. But it's money that if it doesn't work, say if Sean, you know, it doesn't work with Sean Payton after a year or two to three years, they can always say, you know, we can get out of this because I would have to pay out of my pocket as the owner, but it doesn't affect the cap.
Right.
You know, so we still.
Different category.
Exactly. Sure. So it's easier to get out of a Sean Payton contract. Not necessarily get out of it, but it is easy to part ways with Sean Payton if it's not working than I think Russell Wilson. That's why I believe they're going to give it 3 years, because that's the length of the contract for Russell Wilson. Like, they got to pay him for 3 or 4 more years. So they're going to let this 3 years, you know, ride with both of them. And I think if it's not working, then they will make decisions whether to part ways with first the head coach, because it doesn't count against the salary cap, or the player after that.
It just seems like it's like the guy that gambles on all the football games on Saturday, and you're in a big hole, and you're like, all right, I got to put it all in the Hawaii game at midnight.
Mama needs a new pair of shoes.
Double up the ketchup. Let's go. Keep doubling down. Just keep doubling down until you win one, and hopefully you get – I mean, seems to me sort of the philosophy.
And I think that's kind of how I viewed the Rams in their run last year, was they gave up so much money for picks and money for Matthew Stafford, absorbed so much of Jared Goff's contract, paid a bunch of money to their assets, traded for Von Miller, traded for Odell Beckham Jr. They went all in. And if they didn't win a Super Bowl, people were losing their jobs now. But they did, so it was fine. And that's the great eraser, is winning. Because that Rams team was stacked. That was a good Rams team.
Well, they only had
this roster doesn't look like that.
Yeah. Well, they only had to go through really two legitimate quarterbacks, and that was Tom Brady. And then, you know, Patrick Mahomes. They had to go through Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady to get to the Super Bowl. So if you're talking the Denver Broncos, just to get to the playoffs, the quarterbacks they would have to go through, you know, during the season and in the playoffs.
It's tough. The road in the AFC is tough.
Exactly.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Chris Mason, C. Mace, will join us coming up next. It's Caroline Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.